Organized crime has a deep history in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia crime family came onto the scene in the early 1900s, and in the ensuing decades they would gain an enormous amount of power. I'm Brian McCoy. Welcome to The Mob Files. Hello everyone and welcome into The Mob Files. Our subject today is the Philadelphia crime family, sometimes also referred to as the Bruno crime family or the Scarfo crime family. A quick reminder to subscribe if you enjoy today's episode. New episodes come out on Thursdays. We have a lot to cover, so we'll go ahead and jump in. We'll start with a little bit of the backstory on the Philly crime family. In the early 1900s, there were several different Italian crime groups operating in Philadelphia, primarily in South Philadelphia. These groups became more organized under the leadership of Salvador Sabella, who was the first boss of the Philly crime family. Sabella was born in Sicily in 1891. He murdered his boss when he was just 14 years old and he was sent to prison for 3 years. Shortly after his release, he immigrated to the United States and his first stop was in Brooklyn, and he soon became affiliated with the Italian mafia there. When he was still pretty young, he was dispatched to Philadelphia to help build up the organization there. In the beginning, the group was involved with typical organized crime rackets, loan sharking, gambling, protection rackets, the usual. Like many of the crime families and mobsters we have discussed, the Philly crime family gained a lot of power during Prohibition. And that makes a lot of sense. Just because the government outlawed liquor, that didn't mean the demand was going to drop. People still wanted booze and this opened a door for organized crime. With the help of government officials who were willing to look the other way, these groups were able to fill the need and make enormous profits. It was also during this time, the 1920s, when the Philly crime family became officially recognized by New York and Chicago. You'll see why that's a big deal a little bit later on. Salvatore Sabella led the family during all of this, but his days at the top were numbered. In 1927, he was deported to Italy. He had been arrested for murder, and he actually managed to beat that charge, but his illegal status gave authorities the ability to deport him anyway. He returned to the States not long after this, but he retired in 1931. He was only 40 at the time, but I guess he was taking the chance to get out when he could. It's kind of crazy to think that he was actually able to walk away from the life at such a young age. That's usually not possible, but he made it happen. With Sabella out of the picture, a war broke out for control of the family. And this is a common theme throughout the Philly family's history. A powerful boss would step down or be killed, and a fight would break out for control. The two main players in this first war were John Avena and Joseph Davi. They battled for years trying to take control. In 1936, Avena was murdered and Davi became boss of the family. Under his leadership, the family expanded its operations thanks to Davi's connections with other families, including the Genovese and Gambino families in New York City. This is an important point for later in the episode. Philadelphia would become very closely associated with several of the five families, and those families were always trying to take control of Philadelphia. Davi died in 1946 and Joseph Ida was tapped as his replacement. During Ida's reign, which was the 40s and 50s, Vito Genovese pushed hard for control in Philadelphia. His pursuit ended in 1956 when Philly was given a seat on the commission. After that, all of the New York families had to respect that Philly was independent and they needed to stop pushing to take over control there. Shortly after this, the Appalachian debacle occurred and Ida was forced to flee the country. Tony Pollino was named acting boss, but it was a short stint. In 1959, Pollino was murdered and Angelo Bruno was named boss of the family. Angelo Bruno was born in Sicily in 1910. He came to the United States when he was still really young. His family settled in South Philadelphia, where his father operated a grocery store. Angelo initially followed his father into this business, dropping out of high school to run his own store. He eventually got involved with the mob in Philadelphia and built up a list of powerful friends, including Carlo Gambino. Bruno was, of course, a dominant figure in mob history. He expanded the family's operations in gambling, loan sharking, and especially in labor racketeering. Like other bosses, he did not want his guys taking part in the drug trade. The potential long sentences made it more likely that guys would flip if they got picked up, so it was just too dangerous in his eyes. It is interesting, though, he did let other groups sell drugs on his territory as long as they kicked up some of the profits to him. This meant leaving a lot of money on the table, and obviously that didn't sit well with some of his soldiers, and they dealt drugs on the side anyway. And really, that's at least somewhat predictable. These guys were watching mobsters and other families and other groups in their own city rake in money from moving drugs, and they couldn't get in on it. They knew they were leaving a lot of money on the table, and Bruno was getting a piece of those profits, and they weren't seeing it. Another big piece of Bruno's legacy was the expansion of the family's dealings in Atlantic City. Control of Atlantic City was suddenly highly sought after due to casinos being opened in the 1970s. The city had long been recognized as Philadelphia territory, and the New York families respected this enough to ask Bruno for permission to move in. But he never budged. He knew control of the city was too important to allow New York to get in and take a piece of it. Another interesting thing about Angelo Bruno was his preference for peaceful solutions to problems. He thought building good relationships and paying bribes when necessary was more effective than just using sheer force. This actually led to him being referred to as the Gentle Don or the Docile Don. There is evidence that Bruno's approach worked. Through his bribes, he was able to make connections with powerful people, politicians, business leaders, cops, all sorts of people. Not everyone was a fan of how Bruno ran things. This includes some of the mobsters closest to him. In the late 1970s, Bruno's consigliere, Antonio Caponegro, asked the commission to sanction a hit on Bruno so he could take over the family. He was told by Genovese boss Frank Thierry that the commission had approved the hit, but unfortunately for him, that wasn't true. Caponegro, lacking all the important information, had Bruno killed on March 21, 1980. He was shot in the head with a shotgun while he sat in his car in South Philadelphia. Now, like I said, the commission had not approved the hit, so Caponegro was in deep shit. Bruno was a member of the commission, and an unsanctioned hit on him was a big no-no. Caponegro would pay the price just 1 month later. While visiting New York City, he was brutally murdered in retaliation for an unsanctioned hit on a commission member. Three other mobsters who had helped him were taken out as well. Now, apparently Caponegro was under the impression when he was brought to New York that he was going to be officially made boss of the family at that time. Obviously, things went another way. Angelo Bruno had presided over the Philadelphia underworld and had managed, relatively speaking of course, to keep violence and chaos to a minimum. That is always something that fascinates me. You have these mob bosses who are obviously doing illegal things and hurting people, but at the same time they are powerful enough that it keeps their soldiers and other criminals somewhat under control. Now, obviously in a perfect world there would be no crime at all, but in reality there is a legitimate argument that cities were ultimately safer, at least in those days, when guys like Angelo Bruno were in power and keeping other criminals, again including their own guys, somewhat in check. With Angelo Bruno out of the picture, there was a power vacuum in Philadelphia. Philip Testa had taken over the family after Bruno, but he didn't last long. Testa was killed in March 1981 when a nail bomb exploded under his porch. Testa's consigliere, Nico Little Nicky Scarfo, suspected that Testa's underboss, Peter Casella, had conspired with Frank Narducci to have Testa taken out. This sparked a war between Scarfo and Casella. Scarfo enlisted the help of the Genovese family, who he had built connections with during his time running things for Bruno in Atlantic City. The family got Casella to admit to the plot to kill Testa. Casella was banished and forced to leave the city. He actually ended up moving down to Florida. Narducci was not as fortunate. He was killed for his role in things. This actually did not end the war. Scarfo still faced some additional resistance from certain mobsters. However, in a short time, by 1984, Scarfo was able to take full control of the family. One of Nicky Scarfo's first acts as boss was to implement attacks on criminals in Philadelphia who operated outside of the mob. Anybody who didn't kick up was beaten into submission or murdered. This was one of the major differences between Bruno and Scarfo. While Bruno shied away from violence, Scarfo fully embraced it. He's actually known as one of the most violent mob bosses in history, if not the most violent. He would order people killed for just about anything. Any perceived slight or sign of disrespect could get a guy whacked. I'll go through just a few examples here so you get the picture. He had a Greek mob member and his girlfriend murdered in a busy restaurant because the guy had refused to pay the street tax. The fact that he had the guy killed wasn't necessarily unusual given the offense, at least by the standards of that time. But to do it in that way and to take out his girlfriend as well in a busy restaurant, that wasn't normal. He also okayed a hit on a young member because the guy had broken up with his underboss's daughter. Yeah, he was killed over a breakup. Another major difference between these two Philly heavyweights was the drug trade. Bruno had fully opposed his guys being involved with it for the reasons we already discussed, but Scarfo made the decision that they were simply leaving too much money on the table. Now, the drug of choice in Philadelphia back in the 80s was meth. Scarfo eased the family into the business by first just taxing dealers in the city. Again, anyone who didn't pay the tax would face serious consequences. Eventually, the family got into the actual business themselves, and more specifically, they gained control of the P2P manufacturing and distribution. P2P is a key ingredient for one method of cooking meth. In 1987, Scarfo was indicted on charges that he was operating a large-scale drug ring in Philadelphia. 27 other members and associates of the family were also indicted. Scarfo was able to beat the charges and was acquitted in December of 1987. Any joy over this was short-lived, though. He was indicted again alongside many other members of the family in 1988 for racketeering. The underlying crimes alleged included drug trafficking, extortion, illegal gambling, loan sharking, and murder. Scarfo was sentenced to more than 50 years in prison, and he ended up dying in custody at the Federal Medical Center in Butner, North Carolina in 2017. He was 87 years old. Scarfo initially tried to control the family after he was sent to prison, but many of his top guys had been put away as well. He managed to cling to power for a little bit before John Stanfo was named boss in 1991. He had been helping run things since Scarfo went away, but it was made official at that point. Stanfo's appointment sparked another mob war in Philadelphia. Stanfo was viewed as something of an outsider. He was a Philly guy, but he had been in prison for a long time, and so a lot of the younger guys weren't really aware of him, didn't really know him. And another strike against him, at least in their eyes, was that he was supported heavily by New York, specifically the Gambino family. Those who did approve of Stanfo included Joseph Merlino. Merlino was the son of former underboss Sal Merlino. The second war was fought between Stanfo's followers and Merlino's group. There were several murders carried out by both sides and several attempted hits against Merlino and Stanfo, but both managed to survive. In 1994, Stanfo was arrested as part of a major racketeering investigation into the family. He had been recorded by the FBI for years, so they had a lot on him. He was convicted and sentenced to life in prison. The war was effectively over and Merlino's side took control of the family. Merlino allowed Ralph Natali to officially take over as boss, with Merlino serving as underboss but running most of the operations. It's kind of like what happened in The Sopranos when Tony and the other captains let Junior take over as the official boss to serve as a lightning rod of sorts with law enforcement so they could continue to operate safely. Merlino still managed to make a lot of noise, though, even as the underboss. He was flashy and loud, and definitely not shy around the cameras. This pissed a lot of people off, and there were several attempts on his life in the 1990s. In the summer of 1998, Natali was sent back to prison, and Merlino took full control of the family. Despite the fact that he was still the boss, Natali was completely cut off from the family. Merlino ordered the family not to support him. This led to Natali cutting a deal with the government in 1999. And this was a huge deal. Natali was the highest-ranking mob figure to ever flip. The fact that a boss had decided to work with the government so quickly was very shocking. His cooperation led to Merlino and many of his top guys being scooped up and tried on a variety of charges. Merlino was convicted of racketeering in 2001 and was sentenced to 14 years in prison. As part of his deal with the government, Natali had confessed to at least 8 murders. He was released from prison in 2011 and, of course, put immediately into witness protection. After Merlino went away, Joseph Ligombi took over the family. Ligombi had been a soldier during the Scarfo era, but served a lengthy jail sentence from the late 80s until his release in 1997. He operated in a manner more similar to Angelo Bruno than Merlino or Scarfo. He helped stabilize the family and tried to rebuild some of the relationships that Merlino had severely damaged. He ended up facing legal troubles as well, though, and was tried for racketeering in 2014, but it resulted in a hung jury. Law enforcement has reported that Merlino took the family back over once he got out of jail in 2011. He did end up pleading guilty to gambling charges in 2018. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean he was back in charge of the family or running things, but it shows that he did maintain at least some ties to that life. It is believed that outside of the New York families, the Philadelphia crime family is one of the most powerful ones remaining in the U.S. The family has stayed in the news in recent years, mainly for run-ins with law enforcement. In 2018, several members were arrested on drug trafficking charges. In 2020, 15 members and associates were indicted on racketeering charges with the underlying offenses of drug trafficking and illegal gambling. The Philadelphia crime family has a lot of history associated with it. Like so many other mafia families in the United States, they gained a lot of power during the Prohibition era. Over the course of the decades that followed, they built up operations in a number of areas, including labor racketeering, loan sharking, and of course gambling in Atlantic City. The family also had its fair share of heavyweights at the top job, from the gentle Don Angelo Bruno to the hot-headed Nicky Scarfo. All in all, Philadelphia is one of the most impactful non-New York crime families in the history of the American Mafia. Thank you so much for listening to episode 10 of The Mob Files. If you enjoyed, please be sure to follow or subscribe and leave a rating on your listening platform of choice. Thanks again and have a great day.